We've taken you to Siberia a bit lately. You might remember we did a program on Stalin's gulag a week or so ago and the odd consequences of people from the gulag, bright, intelligent prisoners staying on and creating a new Siberia. Well, Siberia is also doing quite nicely for the woolly mammoth. Warmer winters, longer summers, thawing the frozen earth, and all sorts of archaeological treasures have emerged, including their perfectly preserved remains. Exciting times for paleogeneticists, the scientists who analyse ancient DNA. And in February this year came the glad tidings that a team had extracted and reconstructed million-year-old DNA from a mammoth molar. Mind-boggling, but to my mind, even more boggling was the fact that a team of scientists and entrepreneurs have now launched a project to resurrect woolly mammoths over 4,000 years after they went extinct. High time to get our paleogeneticist friend Ross Barnett back on the program. That remind you that last time Ross was on LNL, it was to discuss the demise of ancient megafauna, and he won a koala stamp for his brilliant book, The Missing Links, LYNX. He's on the blower again from his home in the Scottish Highlands. Ross, welcome back.
Oh, thanks very much. It's lovely to be back.
Now, we know that Christianity promises the resurrection of human beings. Now this entitlement is being extended to dead mammoths.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of exciting research going on at the minute. But yeah, I think Christianity's promise, there's really an ethical dimension to this as well. And I think that's probably the more interesting rather than the technical problems associated with it.
I agree with you, Ross, but we'll get around to the ethics a little later. Let's have the fun and games. I understand that the prospect of recreating mammoths and returning to the wild has been discussed for quite a while.
Absolutely. I mean, as long as I've worked in ancient DNA, it's one of the first questions that kind of gets asked. And definitely there's been a lot of technological progress in terms of bringing back DNA from mammoths in particular as one of the kind of iconic animals of the Ice Age. And definitely with the kind of new technologies, things like CRISPR technology, there's been moves to reinsert kind of mammoth genes into elephant cells and try and bring back a kind of analog of the mammoth. We're never going to have mammoths back. Mammoths are extinct and all their kind of genetic information, all their DNA is broken up and there are no living mammoth cells. The best we can do, which is what some people are doing, particularly in the church lab and in the States, is to kind of bring back some of the attributes of mammoths by inserting them into living elephant cells.
So tell me about the Colossal project.
Well, I think I'm not involved with the project, so I don't really know, but it seems that they're very keen on the idea of bringing back mammoths and potentially using them as a kind of rewilding analog. So bringing back sort of mammoth elephant clones, essentially, and putting them back in the permafrost regions of Siberia, which we know are under deep threat from climate change. And the mammoths could potentially help to keep that permafrost locked in through the kind of actions of churning up the soil and, keeping or returning the kind of steppe environment that they used to live in.
So we're not talking Jurassic Park. I think that we can all breathe a sigh of relief there. But tell me about rewilding. I know there's been some spectacular successes. Well, let's look at the reintroduction of the wolf.
Absolutely. I mean, where I'm sitting just now in Scotland, the reintroduction of the wolf has been a kind of long-standing issue for conservationists here, which has a lot of ill feeling on the side of the kind of majority of farmers that make their living from the land up here. And definitely it's something that kind of captures people's imaginations. Wolves went extinct in the 18th century in Scotland, which is not really that long ago. And currently we have a large surplus and an overpopulation of deer here. We have lots of red deer and roe deer, which have no natural predators. We have no wolves, no lynx, no bears. And unfortunately, that means that a lot of the kind of stereotypically highland landscapes, the kind of bare moors and kind of bogland around here, which is so kind of evocative of the highlands, is fairly artificial. It's caused by overgrazing by deer and sheep. And if we had some natural predators to these deer, then they would not graze so much, and we might get a resurgence of some of the Caledonian forest, which has long been gone.
The reintroduction of the wolf to Yellowstone in the US has had quite spectacular consequences.
Absolutely, and we definitely think that that would be the case if it was reintroduced into other regions, particularly in Scotland. So in Yellowstone, they had similar problems with kind of overgrazing by deer and other herbivores. And the wolf had the interesting effect of not just thinning the numbers down, but also introducing this kind of climate of fear that the deer knew that wolves were around and therefore wouldn't stay in one place for too long. And that helped to release the pressure on a lot of the seedlings that were coming up. And they saw a massive increase in the diversity of the botanics in Yellowstone just from the introduction of wolves. It had this massive kind of rippling outward effects just from that one reintroduction.
I'm just looking at some of the consequences. Willows rebounded, the aspen began flourishing, riverbanks stabilized, songbirds returned, as did beavers, eagles, foxes and badgers. So in the best possible outcome, the reintroduction of a hybrid sort of woolly mammoth could start doing good things in Siberia.
Absolutely. I mean, that is the best case scenario. And, you know, the permafrost regions of Siberia are fairly, it's a fairly new environment there. If you go back to the Ice Age when mammoths were around, it was a very different environment, much more species rich, rather than kind of tundra taiga. It was more like a steppe, a kind of grassland with all the kind of, you know, it's not just mammoths that were there. You would have had woolly rhinos, lions, saber-toothed cats, reindeer, bison, all these other kind of components of the Ice Age megafauna would have been there, creating a very different but stable environment.
You mentioned earlier CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R, a gene editing tool. Tell me about that.
So it's a fairly new tool, and the guys that invented it actually got the Nobel Prize a couple of years back. And so it's a technique for altering genes in living cells. So prior to the kind of introduction of CRISPR, there wasn't a very easy way to modify genes in living organisms. Whereas what CRISPR does is it's able to be programmed, so you can put in what DNA sequence you want changed, and it will happily nip into the nucleus of the cell, chop out the bit that you don't want, and put in the bit that you do want. And this is a really kind of game-changing technology for working on modifying living organisms genetically.
I mentioned Colossal's goals earlier have now raised about $20 million Australian dollars to fund the project from backers, including Climate Capital Collective, which is an investment group, backing efforts to lower carbon emissions. Oh, and the famous Winklevoss twins.
The Facebook could be funding mammoths.
it is an irony, isn't it?
Yeah. I wonder how many likes that will get. I think it's definitely an interesting idea, and I can see that there's lots of potential for offshoots of technology and new knowledge. To bring it back to the kind of ethical dimension, I think, as interesting as it sounds, you know, people do live in Siberia. There are populations there. It's very difficult to live with elephants, let alone kind of hybrid mammoth elephants. They cause a lot of disruption, a lot of damage. They can be dangerous. And I think as cool as it sounds, it's a very kind of dangerous idea without, you know, speaking to the people that are actually on the ground there, people that would have to live side by side with these creatures. And that, you know, that's just the human dimension. We also need to think about, you know,
the other irony is, while we're talking about, you know, hybridizing woolly mammoths, ordinary elephants, current coexisting elephants, are in trouble on their own.
Absolutely. And this is the argument that I make as strongly as I can in the Missing Links, is that, you know, we're struggling to protect the large proboscideans that we have, the elephants, the African elephant, the Indian elephant. You know, they've seen massive reductions in numbers through poaching, through habitat loss. And so if we can't live happily with the non-extinct elephants that we have, why are we rushing to bring back the ones that are extinct?
I used to have a strange friendship with Kerry Packer, who was for many years Australia's richest man, and he used to go out to Africa and shoot elephants, and I told him how much I disapproved of this, and I sort of talked him around, and suddenly he got all excited and he decided that he'd import lots and lots and lots of African elephants and let them loose in the Kimberley in Australia, which is
wow.
pretty similar sort of landscape, pretty similar terrain. And I warned him that might get out of control and we'd see elephants running up and down the main streets of Perth. You've got to be careful, don't you, with what you with these experiments?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, rewilding is just the kind of more positive spin on kind of invasive species. And definitely in Australia, you've seen what's happened with not just megafauna, but, you know, microfauna, with rabbits, with cats, with foxes. And then, you know, there's also the issues of camels and water buffalo. So there is huge potential for this to go horribly, horribly wrong. And you have to be very, very careful in what you're putting forward.
Okay, let's go through what they're actually proposing to do. The good Dr. Church had originally envisaged implanting embryos in surrogate female elephants, soured on the idea, and now he's decided to develop an artificial mammoth uterus lined with uterine tissue grown from stem cells. I mean, I must say, that sounds just a little bit Frankensteinian for me.
Absolutely. I mean, it is very brave new world, isn't it? And this sort of tells of the kind of massive technical hurdles that have to be overcome. The idea that, you know, having crunched the numbers, they think it's easier and better to create a stem cell uterus rather than in vitro fertilization of elephants just shows how difficult the process is going to be. And, you know, I think that should also give kind of pause for thought as well.
I understand that the creature, which is called mammophant, incidentally, I failed to mention that earlier, the mammophant fetus will need to be gestated for around 2 years and will reach a weight of over 90 kilos. It's going to need a pretty big artificial uterus.
Absolutely. And, you know, the elephants, the African elephants, have a 24-month pregnancy today, so, you know, that's kind of par for the course. I guess their uteri must get pretty big while they're carrying their calves as well.
It has to be said that at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, researchers developed a sealed bag that could support a fetal lamb for 4 weeks, so I suppose that's a start.
It would have to be fairly strong plastic.
Now, Colossal claims that the first mammophant calves could be born as early as 2027. Please tell me that's an unrealistic time frame.
I think so. I mean, we've kind of heard stories of when the first cloned mammoth is going to be, and it's always been, as long as I've been aware of it, it's always been 6 or 7 years in the future. So I think if I was a betting man, I would put a rather hefty sum on that not being the case, that we're not going to see mammophants in 2027.
But I suppose there's all sorts of good things that might come out of this. Scientists may be able to use Colossal's advances to save species under threat from diseases.
Absolutely, and I think that's really one of the main positives that comes from this kind of research is the kind of offshoots, the advances that come that can help with not the extinct, but with the endangered, with the species that are in trouble today, of which there is an increasing number, and we've seen that in the past with one kind of fairly famous story is that of the Bucardo, the Pyrenean ibex, which went extinct in 2000, but had some living cells saved from the last individual. And although the clone that they created died at birth, it showed that the will was there and the technology was almost there to help severely endangered species come back from the brink.
And given climate change, perhaps species might be enriched with genes to better tolerate, increasing heat and drought.
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's another potential sort of sci-fi imagining. And we know from work that's previously been done on mammoths that there are genes in mammoths that help them with oxygen movement in their blood, temperature sensitivity. So definitely there is that potential as well.
There are, I learned from you, similar rewilding experiments already happening that don't involve genetically engineered mammoths. There's an open-air lab in northern Siberia, for example.
Yes, there's Pleistocene Park, which is run by a father and son Russian scientist duo. And they've had amazing success in just rewilding with megafauna that are still around. So they've brought in bison, they brought in kind of wild horses. I think they've also brought in camels and some other
yaks
species as well.
On the shopping list, yeah.
Yes. And so it's quite a difficult journey to get them to northern Siberia. But once they're there, they have amazing effects. And there's some really amazing photographs of how the habitat has changed and how it's almost reverted back to the Ice Age steppe environment that used to be there, just from the actions of these large animals, depositing dung, moving kind of ground around, aerating the soil, all these kind of really positive biological effects.
I must say that the colossal mob are really sort of getting into some fine detail here. One of the things they're doing is they're genetically engineering their hypothetical animals not to have tusks.
Well, I think, from a purely pragmatic point of view, that's probably a wise idea, considering how detrimental to elephant survival having tusks is today.
It's interesting. I can remember on a trip to China discovering that quite a lot of those extraordinary carved tusks were not elephant ivory, which of course is technically illegal, but mammoth ivory, which is legal, and there's a lot of it around.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a kind of almost an industry that's grown up around mammoth mining. So every summer during the thaw and the permafrost, there's people that go hunting for mammoth remains and find tusks specifically for the carving market.
Tell me, Ross, is it feasible that we might save, for example, our lost thylacine?
Well, the thylacine is one of my favourite extinct species for sure, and it's only been gone for 80 years compared to the 4,000 years of the mammoth. I think if this technology advances far enough that they can bring back a mammoth, then I don't see why not. They couldn't look into bringing back the thylacine. I mean, the problem is with the thylacine, there's not a particularly close relative that could carry a thylacine joey to term. Although I guess something like a numbat or maybe even a devil would be potentially appropriate. But I guess with all marsupials, they don't have the problem of a 90 kilo fetus with the sort of small size that joeys come out at.
There are 450 thylacines in museums around the world, most are skin and bones, but there's also 13 joeys preserved in alcohol or formaldehyde, so there's plenty of material to work with.
Yes, for sure. And definitely alcohol is a great DNA preservative. Formaldehyde, not so much. But we're at the stage now where the complete genome of the thylacine has been sequenced. And so we have that as a kind of informative backdrop for any future work. And there's been a lot of work done on them.
So, Ross, it's an exciting time for someone in your line of work, but fraught with danger and with ethical dilemmas.
Definitely. And I think this is almost the kind of only aspect in which the kind of Jurassic Park scenario comes into play, is that we need to think about it, just because we can doesn't mean we should.
And on that note of warning, wise warning, we take our departure from Ross Barnett, paleogeneticist and author. His book, which won a koala stamp, is The Missing Links, LYNX. Very good pun there, Ross. Published by Bloomsbury.